Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your week in review for Saturday, February 27th. I wasn't going to lead with this topic, but I watched the entire healthcare summit on Thursday, and it's really quite comical to have someone like Democratic Congressman Charlie Rangel featured prominently in terms of the House leadership, only to learn minutes after the forum had broken up that he had been admonished by the House Ethics Committee for taking corporate-funded junkets to the Caribbean. That pretty well sums up the state of affairs these days. Our system, one that perpetuates the re-election of these bozos, is a sham, and throwing some of the bums out in November is far from the solution. But on the healthcare issue, first we had the run-up to the event. I'll comment on the other side. According to the latest USA Today Gallup poll, by 49% to 43%, those surveyed oppose passage of a health care bill like those that Democrats have drafted. The latest Newsweek survey has it 49 to 40% against. Americans by 52 to 39% margin oppose using the procedure known as reconciliation, whereby a 51-vote majority rather than the 60 is needed to bypass a potential Senate filibuster. But reconciliation is where we are now headed. Anatole Kletsky, London Times. In short, Mr. Obama has staked his entire presidency on today's summit. If you were not convinced, just listen to the president's own radio broadcast last weekend. Quote, what's being tested in the healthcare summit is not just our ability to solve this one problem, but our ability to solve any problem, close quote. Consider what 3 years without effective government in Washington could mean, not only for America, but for the entire Western world. The absence of effective U.S. leadership will dash any hopes of progress in foreign policy, whether on broad issues such as energy, trade, and climate change, or on security threats such as Afghanistan, Iran, and the Middle East. But even more troubling would be the economic and financial effects. Gridlock over health care would imply similar stalemates on taxes, public spending, the budget, macroeconomic stimulus, and financial reform. As a result, an active response to any future financial crisis might become impossible. Even worse, any important action to control U.S. government borrowing could be ruled out. If the financial markets seriously reached this conclusion, all the debates about government debt and public spending in Britain, Greece, and other countries would be a waste of breath. A genuine loss of confidence in America's fiscal outlook would create a financial crisis so horrific that actions by the British or European governments would be swept away like beach huts in a tsunami. That was Anatole Kletsky of the London Times. Editorial Wall Street Journal. A mere 3 days before President Obama's supposedly bipartisan health care summit, the White House released a new blueprint that Democrats say they will ram through Congress with or without Republican support. So, after election defeats in Virginia, New Jersey, and even Massachusetts, and amid overwhelmingly public opposition, Democrats have decided to give the voters what they don't want anyway. The glory of progressive governance and democratic consent. The journal continues, the larger political message of this new proposal is that Mr. Obama and Democrats have no intention of compromising on any incremental reform or of listening to Republicans or any other ideas on health care. They want what they want, and they're going to play by Chicago rules and try to dragoon it into law on a narrow partisan vote via congressional rules that have never been used for such a major change in national policy. If you want to know why Democratic Washington is ungovernable, this is it. And so we move on to Thursday's seven-hour marathon. Gerald Seib, Wall Street Journal. What should be remembered are the three broad questions that the discussion showed are the real source of division. Is the goal comprehensive or incremental change? This basic difference emerged at the very outset of the summit in exchange between Mr. Obama and Republican Senator Lamar Alexander. Democrats want a comprehensive approach that overhauls insurance practices, expands coverage, changes Medicare, and attacks cost all at once. Republicans don't simply question that approach, but flatly reject it. We've come to the conclusion that we don't do comprehensive well, Mr. Alexander said. Then, uttering the phrase that became the mantra of the day for his side, he said Republicans want to throw out the big bills already passed in favor of a step-by-step approach. That's more than a tactical difference, it's a deep strategic disagreement. Is access or cost the top priority? Democrats want to expand coverage to nearly all Americans because they think that is a laudable societal goal, and because they say the absence of universal coverage actually is driving up cost. Republicans essentially argue the opposite. Washington's top goal ought to be to hold down costs first and then rely on those lower costs to bring about expanded coverage by making it easier for people to obtain and keep coverage. Should government or markets set the standards? This area of dispute helps explain why the two parties can't reach a consensus even on points on which they seem to agree. Allowing insurance policies to be sold across state lines and allowing individuals and small businesses to come together to form big pools to buy insurance jointly. It ended up being government should set minimum standards versus individuals and market forces taking the lead. Gerald Seib continues, those are honest disagreements. The problem is that, in closing, Mr. Obama held out only modest hope that they can be resolved in a month or so he gave lawmakers. I don't know, frankly, whether we can close that gap, the president said. David Brooks, New York Times. As usual, the quality of the comments got worse the closer you got to the party leadership. The Democratic Senate leader, Harry Reid, gave remarks that veered between the misleading and the incoherent. Statements from Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, were partisan spin. The Republican leaders, Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, were smart enough to stand back and let Senator Lamar Alexander lead the way, which he did genially and intelligently. While Alexander was speaking, Reid and Pelosi wouldn't even deign to look at him. You also got to see the Obama presidency encapsulated in one event. At the very end, the president summarized some possible points of agreement between the two parties, offered some concessions, and asked Republicans to see if they could make some on their own. As always, with the Obama compromise offers, this offer seemed to be both sincere and insincere. Embodying the core contradiction of the Obama presidency, the president seemed both to want to craft a new package and also to defend the strictly Democratic approach. I think he's a bipartisan man stuck in a partisan town, but maybe he's an iron partisan fist in a velvet post-partisan glove. That was David Brooks. Paul Krugman, New York Times. If we're lucky, Thursday's summit will turn out to have been the last act in the great health reform debate, the prologue to passage of an imperfect but nonetheless history-making bill. If so, the debate will have ended as it began, with Democrats offering moderate plans that draw heavily on past Republican ideas and Republicans responding with slander and misdirection. Nobody really expected anything different, but what was nonetheless revealing about the meeting was the fact that Republicans, who had weeks to prepare for this particular event and have been campaigning against reform for a year, didn't bother making a case that could withstand even minimal fact-checking. Oh, come on, Paul. Peggy Noonan, Wall Street Journal. Mr. Obama did not help himself by his manner. The summit highlighted, even showcased, something unappealing and unhelpful there, a tendency to attempt to show dominance and command by patronizing, even subtly bullying, even trimming. All people in public life have moments like this. Most people do in whatever walk, but you're not supposed to have them when you're trying to sway minds, reach out, and build support. Which left me doubting that that was what he was actually trying to do, excuse me. The way the meeting was arranged, Ms. Noonan continues, the president was the teacher, the lecturer. Arrayed before him were the bright, if occasionally unruly, students. He was keen to establish that it was his meeting. He decides who speaks next and who should wrap up. He decides what is and is not a legitimate point. He was Mr. President. They were John and Lamar. He wielded a shiny pen like an anchorman eager to show depth and ease. He even said, quote, there was an imbalance in the opening statements because I am the president. Yowza. Grace shows strength. Accommodation shows security. This showed, well, not strength. When Representative Eric Cantor attempted to make a sharp point, the president took the camera off him by calling for his aides and conferring with him as Mr. Cantor spoke. The president has entered a boorish phase. One thing about Mr. Obama is that he is in many ways an unusually true to form political figure. Nothing forces him off his subject. Opposition doesn't deflect him. He also, as he demonstrated in the 2008 debates, likes to speak long to take the oxygen out of the room, to tire his opponents and leave them having to decide which of his many statements to address first. What the meeting made clear is what the Democrats are going to do, not step back and save the moderates of their party, but attempt to bully a bill through the Congress. This is boorish of them, and they'll suffer for it. That was Peggy Noonan. Editorial, Wall Street Journal. In the end, after all the bipartisan cooing, the president's 20-minute closing argument explained where the debate really is. Democrats win the election, they are going to do what they want to do, starting next week, and on a partisan vote if they can shanghai enough members. The point of yesterday's session was to give a soothing, moderate political gloss to a government health care takeover that will raise costs, greatly expand the entitlement state, and reduce choice and competition. The opposite of everything Mr. Obama claims. Well, some of the preceding commentary, even Ms. Noonan's, was far too easy on the president. I was jotting down my own notes about him during the event, scribbling, "Just who is this guy? Just let him run at the mouth. I am right," referring to Obama's air of superiority. Responding to a Republican who said such and such an issue should be addressed at the next summit, our president, who has been telling us for a year there is nothing more important than the health care issue, shot back, "We won't do another of these because people don't have 7 to 8 hours to spend on it." I kid you not. You can look it up. This summit was a sham through and through, and as I've consistently said, the healthcare legislation, which at 2,400 pages better have some good ideas, still doesn't attack what should be item one. Not affordable healthcare, keeping people alive once they enter the hospital. You know how I've been harping on this fact that 100,000 a year die of infections picked up in our facilities each year? Check this out from a Reuters story this week. According to a new study, the first to detail the ever-worsening problem of hospital-acquired illness, some 48,000 patients die annually from pneumonia or blood poisoning picked up in the hospital. Those who developed a blood infection, sepsis, not only died at a rate of 1 in 5, but the survivors stayed in the hospital 11 days longer after surgery at a cost of $32,900 per patient. What am I missing? A real president would have assembled the congressional leadership a week after his inauguration and said, "Look, we can work together and pick off these issues one by one, paying for them as we go, but I'm giving you a deadline of 6 months or I'll do everything in my power to keep you guys from going on summer recess." Yes, I believe, as Republicans do, that the critical issue of health care reform should be tackled on an incremental basis. I believe that the issue of fraud is important and not to be scoffed at, as the president did on Thursday. I believe, as Senator Tom Coburn hammered home, that a huge part of our health care problem is that we take too many tests. I believe there should be far more of a very public emphasis on prevention, much of which can be accomplished at little cost with some very effective public service announcements, for crying out loud. Look how effective all our pronouncements on washing one's hands proved to be in combating H1N1. The president led that effort. We need more of that. But the bottom line of what is being rammed through is that we can't afford the health care plan in its present form. Turning to the stock market, stocks finished up for the month of February to the tune of 2.6% for the Dow Jones, but on the week they slipped a little, with the Dow finishing down 0.7% to 10,325, while the S&P 500 lost 0.4% and NASDAQ 0.3%. I'll be back with you next Saturday. Have a great week.